Hi, and welcome to a conversation with David Morgan, the silver guru of themorganreport.com, and myself, Mike Maloney. About a month ago, we were up at the Silver Summit in San Francisco. Both of us were speaking there, and it was really nice catching up. And David and I used to do quite a few videos together, and we just thought we'd get together and do another one here. So how are you doing, David?
I'm doing well, Mike, and thanks for the invitation.
Before the video started here, you were talking about the commitment of traders report. And on gold, it looks like they've covered about half their position. On silver, they haven't covered that much. They've only covered about a third of their position. And my guess is that as we noodle sideways here, or just noodle down very slowly, that they're going to increase their position. And that there's a possibility of a further price drop. You're really the expert on futures contracts here. You know more about it than I do. So can you describe a futures contract and what the commitment of traders is for the listeners?
Well, I think I'll be real brief on it, Mike. We preface with, what the Morgan Report's all about, and it's, a monthly newsletter, but then the premium members, which is one service we offer, and then the mastermind, I go in and talk about whatever's pertinent on an as-required basis. So I use the commitment of traders. I think the best for our viewers is go ahead and Google commitment of traders. I think the point to remember is that the price is set in basically a fictional way, which means that these bets are made long and short, the price is going up or down, and that only 1% of any commodity is ever delivered off the exchange, including silver, gold, oats, rice, soybean oil, you name it. So it's a price-setting mechanism, and people say, well, it doesn't have any bearing in the real world, and that is not true because with a certain couple of exceptions, once the paper price is set, a dealer such as yourself, Maya, can and will perform at that price plus your required markup. I mean, people think that, if silver's at 16 even, for example, they should be able to buy $16 silver. Well, you can off the exchange. You get a big 1,000-ounce block, and it's not even 1,000 ounces. When you buy a silver round or a silver coin, that block was manufactured, extruded, stamped, punched, transported, et cetera. So the price is going to be a dollar higher or a dollar and a half higher or 250 or 265 or whatever in the Silver Eagle domain. So probably went a little too long on that, but no, I think this is something that's important if you trade or you want to position trade like I teach to the Morgan Report website members. But for the general public, I think it's more confusing than it's probably worth.
Yeah, you said that the paper price, the fictitious gold and silver that they create contracts for that doesn't really exist, it sets the price, and that is relevant, and the whole business operates at that price. However, there are times when shortages develop and it diverges, the physical delivery price verges dramatically from the, back in 2008 when that shortage happened, everybody was running out of physical gold and silver. And you don't sell your last ounce at the same price that you used to sell when you were selling hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of ounces, in a specific time period. When you're down to the last ounce, you tend to charge a little bit more. Because you're not going to get another one to replace it for a little while. So that both the dealers and the suppliers, the refineries, the mints, the wholesale suppliers and such, they all raised their premium, their spread on gold and silver during that time period. So what were you going to say?
I just want to add on that, the physical market does dictate the actual price at times, as you talked about 2008. And if you go back to the early 2000s with palladium, when Ford Motor Company decided they were going to switch from platinum in their catalytic converters to palladium, they just made a huge physical purchase, and that took the price from like the $500 level to $1,100. And to be in the futures market, you had to put up nearly double the amount of the cash price to keep a paper contract, a fiction. So this shows you what the physical market can do at times, and the silver market's already manifested this a few times, And I've maintained from the beginning, as you know, Mike, that the only thing that's really going to break the free market into a free price discovery is when that takes place, you know, in the precious metals markets. And I believe it will happen. Again, yeah. It's already happened, but I think it'll happen again.
Yeah, when we finally have monetary demand versus commodities trading in the precious metals, that's when everything explodes, including the manipulation of precious metals being overwhelmed. And so let's talk about the manipulation a little bit. You know, just last week, Deutsche Bank turned over a whole bunch of texts and emails as evidence, as part of a settlement that they did for $35 million, which means that they thought their exposure could be far, far, far higher than that, and they did not want to spend the legal bills with the potential of losing. And they turned over evidence against all of the other banks that are involved in this manipulation. And like the people at GATA, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, they've been called lunatics for years. Anybody that talks about manipulation of precious metals, right away, the regular media turns a, they look at you funny and they think you've got a tinfoil hat on, that you're just an absolute lunatic. But it turns out that the lunatics are right in this case. So what's your take on the all of the stuff that's happening when it comes to the exposure of the manipulation?
Well, first, I agree with you. Secondly, I watched your video you did on it very recently. I think it was yesterday. I sent it out to our Twitter feed, and I know there's a fair amount that follow what we do on Twitter. On top of that, you know, as you're going through what Nick Laird did, and Nick and I go back a long time. In fact, the first public domain article I ever wrote about silver, Nick Laird was the first one to pick it up and put it on his website. So public shout out to you, Nick. Thank you. And we've known each other since, I don't know, 1999 or something. Anyway, did a great job. And as I was watching your video, Mike, it just really hit me hard that whole chapter in the Silver Manifesto on silver manipulation, it was in words what Nick was showing in real time, in real life. In other words, what we talked about with the inability for a free market to have these discrepancies that are absolutely outside of any probability, which means you get these opens at a certain price in the London market, and you get these opens in the New York at another price over and over and over again. You did a good job of showing that on your video. And we went through that in our chapter. And I've always maintained it's extremely difficult to prove manipulation, because the manipulators will go into court and say, well, we just want to profit, and it's a free market, and we just start profiting, and, you know, what's the problem? But now with what Nick is showing, with these banks being exposed by Deutsche Bank, basically laying down and exposing all this, and to take like the work that Adrian Douglas did, which is a primary foundational stuff that we used and expanded on in our silver manipulation chapter in the Silver Manifesto. I think at this point in time, Mike, we have, I think, the best opportunity to actually prove it, because it's got to be beyond a shadow of a doubt. When you get these messages back and forth, let's take it down, ha 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 ha, and all this stuff. I mean, they're so arrogant. And, you know, when you see that over and over and over again in the court of law, you know, it's pretty condemning as far as what really goes on in this market.
Yeah, you know, it showed that these people are so arrogant that they feel that they are above the law, because here's a bunch of very damning evidence that was showing that they did actually collude. These competitors got together to manipulate a market and fleece the public. And they think that they're entitled to that, that it's okay for them to steal and to violate all of the antitrust laws. It's just amazing that all of these major banks are involved. I dedicated a whole chapter in my book as well to manipulation. But my conclusion was that I was very glad that the manipulation existed. Most people complain about it all the time, but if we didn't have a manipulation, you wouldn't have prices as low as they are, so you wouldn't have as much of an opportunity. And low prices, once gold and silver are below the mining, the cost of mining for a mine, that mine has to eventually either be mothballed or just shut down. And so it leads to eventual shortages. This takes years and years and years to develop, but it creates an opportunity that is mind-boggling. I think one of the I've called it the greatest opportunity in the history of mankind.
Yeah, I think the wealth transfer will be the greatest in the history of mankind. I'd just like to add on again on that video how you show the clustering, you called it, of these banks talking to each other at the highest. Well, I so far have been lucky or skillful to call every major top in the silver market from the very beginning, meaning the 23rd of September. 2003 was the bottom of the silver market by my calculations. But regardless of the exact date, the point is it went to like 750. I called that top. It bounced off where it broke out, which is the 555 level. Made up to 21. I called that top. So did Robert Prechter. Prechter said that's the end of it. I said, no, it's not. And then it topped around the $50 level, and I called that top as well. And we have yet to get even close to that level again. But by using the commitment trader, certainly it gives you an advantage. And what I'm trying to state is that people say that you cannot really get an edge on the market with trading or whatever. I do both. I'm one of the few that can do investment philosophy, which is about 75% of my holdings. And I will trade as much as, but not always as much as 25%. Mm-hmm. And it's a psychological thing. I like to do it. I feel like I'm beating the banks. And there are ways to do it. But most traders should really not bother. They don't have the personality for it. They don't have the time for it. There's a lot of reasons to stay out. I like for almost everyone just to buy and accumulate over a reasonable length of time. And continue to buy, and when the price goes down, you're buying more for your dollar or your euro, and when the price goes up, you're buying less, which is instills discipline, and it's really the best way to go for most people.
You're talking about accumulation of physical there?
Yes, I've physical always
gold. Okay.
Because you, yeah. you know me for yeah. days.
That's the reason that I deal with you so much, and I don't deal with many other stock pickers that just recommend that everybody put everything into a speculative position. I think that that's dangerous, and you've always recommended that what I consider prudent have a core position that is as low risk as possible, and then have a certain percentage of your portfolio that you want to do a more speculative play with, where there's the potential of much larger gains.
Yeah, precisely, and I know that there's a lot of people that get some value out of interviews like this. And they'll never subscribe. That's fine. I think I want to help as many people as I possibly can. And if you do not understand what's going on, you better get educated pretty quickly, especially probably, Mike, you've done as much as anybody on educating the public with your Hidden Secrets of Money series. And you need to have a physical position in silver, at least in gold and silver, if you're fairly well off.
Yeah, when it comes to picking stocks, that's something where there's a whole lot of factors going on. And I believe that anybody that's going to be doing that should be putting together a team of advisors, basically. Robert Kiyosaki used to say that investing is a team sport. And a team is basically...